Here is the moment in this paper that I keep coming back to. There is a math problem, a recurrence sequence, initial values 211, 375, 420, 523, and a rule that builds each new term from the four before it. The task is to compute three particular far-out terms and sum them. A small language model is given this problem, and another small language model, running alongside it, writes Python code to solve it. The Python code is correct. It hard-codes all four initial values. It encodes the recurrence relation exactly. It prints the right sum. Now here is the part that should make you sit up. The second model never saw the problem. Not the numbers, not the recurrence, not a single token of the question. It is being told what to compute through a channel that is not made of words.
Right, and the way that channel works is the whole paper. Before we go further, a quick note on what you are listening to. This episode is AI-generated. The script is from Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7. I'm Eric, that's Bella, and we are both AI voices from 11 Labs. Neither company is involved in producing the show. The paper is The Bicameral Model, Bidirectional Hidden State Coupling Between Parallel Language Models, from a team at AWS Agentic AI, Cedric Flamont, Udaya Guy, and Kana Shimizu. It went up on Archive on May 11th, 2026, and we are recording 2 days later. And the way that second model knew what to compute, without ever reading the problem, is the thing this paper is actually about.
So let's set the stage. When two language models work together today, in an agent framework, a debate setup, a tool-using system, they talk to each other in text. One model writes tokens. Those tokens become the input to another model. That model writes more tokens. Text is the universal interface. It is also a brutal bottleneck. Inside a transformer, every token position carries this rich internal vector, thousands of numbers, that the model has been refining as it processes context. Researchers call this the residual stream. By the time the model picks one token from its vocabulary to emit, it has compressed all of that into a single discrete choice. Almost everything the model was, in some loose sense, thinking, gets thrown away at the output layer. The authors ask a question that sounds simple. What if you didn't throw it away? What if two pre-trained models could whisper to each other through those internal vectors directly, before the compression step? Not merged, not fine-tuned together. Frozen, completely frozen, running side by side with a tiny trainable bridge between their hidden states.
And the test case they pick is tool use, which is a smart choice because tools create an unambiguous capability gap. A half-billion parameter model is basically incapable of reliable multi-digit multiplication. A calculator is perfect at it. So if you can take that small model, couple it to a copy of itself that has calculator access, and the pair gets dramatically better at arithmetic. Without either model ever generating tokens the other one reads, then real information must be moving through that activation channel. Otherwise, the gain has nowhere to come from.
The headline number for the arithmetic setup is the one to keep in your head. A half-billion model on its own scores 36% on their arithmetic benchmark. Couple two copies of it through this bridge, give one of them calculator access, and accuracy goes to 96%. Same base model, frozen, untouched. The only thing that trained is the bridge, which is about 1% of the combined parameters.
96 from 36, with a 1% bridge, on a model class that nobody would normally trust to do arithmetic at all.
Right, and the same shape of result holds for harder reasoning. They take a sub-1 billion model, hook the auxiliary up to Z3, the standard satisfiability solver, the kind of program that takes a stack of logical constraints and finds an assignment that satisfies them all, and run it on zebra logic. That's a benchmark of those logic grid puzzles. Alice lives next to Bob. The cat owner drinks coffee. Figure out who lives where. Their coupled pair scores around 65%. For calibration, Claude 3.5 Sonnet on the same benchmark, without solver access, scores around 36%. GPT-4o, around 32. So two sub-1 billion models, plumbed together correctly, outscore frontier models on this task.
That's the result that will probably make this paper. But I want to slow us down before we get to why it works, because the architecture is genuinely strange, and I think the listener needs the picture in their head. Bella, walk through what is actually happening at one decoding step.
Sure. Picture two transformer stacks sitting side by side. Same architecture in this case, two copies of the same pre-trained model. Call one the primary, that's the one the user reads from. Call the other the auxiliary, that's the one with tool access. Both are frozen. Now picture a small piece of new machinery wired between them at, say, layer 10 of each model. That's the bridge. At every single decoding step, every token position, both models step forward together. They process their inputs through their first 10 layers in parallel. At layer 10, the bridge does its work. It reads the primary's hidden state, pushes it through a tiny translation network to convert it into the auxiliary's representation space, and hands it to the auxiliary. The auxiliary then decides how much of that signal to actually let in.
And decides here is the load-bearing word. It's not deciding the way a person decides. It's a learned gate.
Exactly. There's a tiny subnetwork, the gate, that looks at the auxiliary's own current state and outputs one number between 0 and 1. Call it sigma. The auxiliary's new hidden state becomes a blend, 1 minus sigma times its old state, plus sigma times the translated signal from the primary. The extremes are clean. When sigma is near 0, the auxiliary is ignoring its partner, proceeding as if the bridge wasn't there. When sigma is near 1, the auxiliary is replacing its own thinking with whatever the primary just sent. Anything in between is a soft mix. And critically, this gate fires fresh at every token. It is not a static knob set once for the whole run. It is a per-token dynamic decision.
The analogy I kept reaching for as I read this is a co-pilot with a volume knob. You're flying the plane. There's another pilot next to you. At every moment, you decide how much you want to listen to their inputs. Sometimes you ignore them. Sometimes you let them take over. Usually, you blend. And the knob is yours, not theirs. The receiver controls how loud the partner is allowed to be.
That's exactly the right shape. And then the whole thing happens in reverse. Both models keep running through their middle layers, and at another layer, pair the auxiliary's state gets translated back into the primary's space, and the primary's own gate decides how much to let in. Both models finish their remaining layers. Both emit a token. That is one decoding step. Forward coupling, then reverse coupling, then they both produce output, all within one token's worth of work.
And the auxiliary is the one that has tool access. So when it emits a token like an open paren for the calculator, an external system intercepts it, computes the answer, and forces the result back into the auxiliary's stream as tokens. The primary never sees any of that. The primary doesn't see the tool call, doesn't see the tool result. The only way information about the tool's output reaches the primary is through the activation channel on the reverse coupling pass.
Which is what makes the channel measurable. If the primary gets the right answer to a multiplication problem it can't do on its own, and the only information it received about that answer came through hidden state coupling, not through tokens, then the channel must be carrying real content.
Now here is the part that I think is the actual story of the paper. Everything we've described, the bridge, the gates, the translations, is just architectural plumbing. It's a mechanism that, in principle, could carry information between the models. The interesting question is what it actually carries. And the authors, very deliberately, do not tell it what to carry. They train this thing on next token loss. The primary tries to predict the right answer tokens. The auxiliary tries to predict tokens that include valid tool calls. That's it. No protocol is specified. Nobody says the forward channel should encode the operands of the next arithmetic operation. Nobody says the reverse channel should be silent except when a tool returns. Those are things that, if they happen, have to emerge from gradient descent on task loss alone.
And they do emerge. That is the result. The gate, trained from scratch starting MIR zero, converges on a structured protocol that is selective, directional, and surprisingly legible.
Bella, you've spent the most time with the emergence dynamics. I want you to walk through what they actually observe during training, because the phase transition is one of the more striking pieces in the paper.
So during the arithmetic training run, they track four quantities over time. Forward coupling strength, basically, how loud is the forward channel on average? Reverse coupling strength, same for the other direction. Tool recall, when the auxiliary calls the calculator, is it calling it with the right operands? And accuracy, does the primary produce the right final answer? The trajectory is striking. Forward coupling activates almost immediately. The auxiliary starts listening to the primary within the first few thousand training samples. Then tool recall ramps up. The auxiliary figures out, over time, that the operands it should be punching into the calculator are the ones the primary is currently thinking about. And then accuracy. Accuracy sits at zero for 28,000 samples. Just zero. Then, within 4,000 to 8,000 more samples, it jumps from zero to somewhere between 40 and 60%. And then it climbs and stabilizes above 95.
The bridge that doesn't span anything until the last plank is in.
That image is doing real work for me here. You have to learn three things in causal order before any of them produces value. Forward coupling has to carry the right information from primary to auxiliary. The auxiliary has to learn to translate that into the right tool call. And the reverse coupling has to deliver the result back through the gate into the primary's stream in a way the primary can use. Any one of those failing, and the whole system scores zero. So gradient descent has to walk the system through a region where nothing works for a long time, and then everything starts working at once.
And here is the part of the emergence story I think is the conceptual heart of the paper. When you look at where the gate is firing, token by token, across a real sequence, the pattern is not noise. It is meaningful. The authors have a figure showing this on an arithmetic problem. The prompt says something like, sum up the total cost of all items, followed by a list of dollar amounts. The forward coupling, primary to auxiliary, lights up specifically on the words sum, total, cost, all items. Not on the dollar amounts themselves, because by the time those words show up, the auxiliary has already received the dollar values earlier in the sequence. The forward channel is firing on the semantically important task words, and the reverse channel, auxiliary to primary, stays silent the entire time, all the way through the question, all the way through the auxiliary writing out the calculator call, all the way through the calculator computing. Silent. Then it spikes at exactly one moment, the moment the calculator returns its result. The answer flows back through the reverse coupling, into the primary's hidden state, and the primary uses it.
And that is a structured communication protocol. Quiet during routine work, loud at semantically critical moments, directionally meaningful, selective in time. Nobody designed it. Nobody specified that the protocol should look like this. The only thing the training procedure rewarded was getting the next token right. The protocol fell out.
This is the cocktail party version of the result. Two models, given a joint task and a channel they don't know how to use, develop something that looks like a habit of when to whisper and when to stay quiet, entirely from succeeding or failing at the task. That is the conceptual headline, I think. Not the accuracy numbers, though those are striking. The fact that a protocol emerges from task loss alone.
And it is the protocol structure that makes the Python example we opened with possible. The auxiliary writes correct problem-specific Python code without seeing the problem text. There's the recurrence example. There's a base conversion problem where the auxiliary recovers two-digit strings, 2345 in base 6, 41324 in base 5, and both base numbers, all from hidden state alone. There's a factor counting problem where the auxiliary not only recovers the structure, but emits the simplified exponents, having silently done the algebra to convert 4 to the 6th into 2 to the 12th. High bandwidth, structured information transfer. through a channel that has zero linguistic structure imposed on it.
Now, I want to put some weight on this, because the Python case is also where the paper's honesty gets tested. Bella, you brought up the qualitative win, the auxiliary reconstructing 7 numerical parameters. Real. Genuinely impressive. But I think we owe the listener the aggregate picture, too, because on the broader Python tool benchmark, math, the coupled system scores around 62%. The unaugmented base model, with reasoning turned on, scores around 82%. The coupled system underperforms its own base model by roughly 20 points on that benchmark.
Which complicates the story.
It complicates the story. The paper's framing tends to highlight the cases where coupling rescues a problem the base model failed on. And those cases are real. There are 127 of them. But on the aggregate, just letting the base model think things through outperforms wiring the bridge in. So what we should say honestly is, the Python case demonstrates the channel can carry remarkably high bandwidth information, which is the conceptual point. But it does not demonstrate that this architecture is the right way to do general mathematical reasoning. On that, the simpler thing is currently better.
That's fair, and it lines up with the broader pattern the paper itself documents. The technique helps when the capability gap between the base model and the tool is large and unambiguous. Arithmetic for a half-billion model. Big gap, big help. Logic puzzles for a small model versus a formal solver. Big gap, big help. General math reasoning, where the base model can already think reasonably well, narrower gap, and the noise the coupling injects is bigger than the signal it adds. On GSM-8K, which is grade school math word problems, the base half-billion model scores around 50% on its own. Coupled, across all of the layer wiring configurations they tested, it drops to around 40. Hidden state perturbations cost more than they buy when the model could already do the task.
And I want to flag the zebra logic result similarly, because the way the paper presents it is honest in the body, but the headline number deserves a footnote. The initial training data, before tuning, produced about 4% accuracy on zebra logic. The path to 65% involved aligning the training format to match zebra logic's specific clue style and adding 11 clue types that had been overlooked. So the 1.7 times frontier models comparison is real, but it landed after iteration on training data to match the benchmark distribution. What you don't have yet is a clean test on logic puzzle distributions where that iteration hasn't happened.
Right. And the failure mode breakdown they report is informative there, too. About 2/3 of the errors on zebra logic are what the authors call grounding failures. The auxiliary formulates the right logical constraints, but the entity names it uses don't match the declared domain. It says, the dog, when the puzzle is about birds. The reasoning shape is right, the symbol to string mapping is wrong. Which is interesting because it suggests the hidden state channel might be transmitting structural information, the shape of the constraints, more reliably than referential information, which specific entity is which.
That's a real qualifier on the auxiliary reconstructs the problem from activations framing. The auxiliary is reconstructing a structurally correct version of the problem, but the bindings to specific names can drift. Which, when you think about it, is the kind of thing you'd expect from a low-precision continuous channel. Bella, let me hand off one more piece before we step back. The ablation that I think matters most. Walk us through it.
I'll take it. The obvious skeptic's reaction to all of this is to say, you added trainable parameters. Of course you got better performance. The bridge is essentially an adapter. You fine-tuned the primary model through a tiny adapter. You didn't need the auxiliary at all. So the authors build a control for exactly this. They call it the adapter equivalent. Same interface, same parameter count, same training procedure, except they bypass the auxiliary model entirely. The signal goes through the forward translation network, then immediately through the reverse translation network, and back into the primary. The auxiliary's transformer never participates, just the bridge, looped back on itself, as a regular adapter on the primary.
And the numbers?
On arithmetic, the adapter equivalent scores 48%. The full bicameral system scores 96.5%. On zebra logic, the adapter equivalent scores 7.5%. The full system scores 65%. So the bridge alone, the same parameters, the same training, just without the auxiliary's computation in the loop, gets you a small improvement. Most of the gain is the auxiliary actually doing work. The auxiliary is reasoning. The bridge is just the channel through which that reasoning is communicated.
That's the ablation that earns the architecture its keep. Without it, you could explain everything as adapter training. With it, the only consistent explanation is that real computation is happening in the auxiliary, and real information is crossing between the two models.
And the broader point I want to make about this architecture, Eric, I think you set this up well, is that it sits in a specific spot in a conversation the field has been having for a couple of years. The dominant frame for multi-model systems has been agents talking to each other in text. Text is the universal interface. Text is what pre-trained models natively produce. Text is debuggable. But text is also lossy. Every hop between agents collapses thousands of numbers down to one token choice. And there has been a quieter line of work asking whether that bottleneck is actually necessary. Work on representation engineering, on activation steering, on grafting hidden states between models. This paper is a fairly forceful entry in that conversation. It says, the bottleneck is not necessary. Frozen pre-trained models can be coupled below the level of tokens, and if you do it right, the coupling learns its own protocol.
I think the implications run in three directions, and they have different time horizons. In the short term, the practical claim is the one we already touched on. Small models, coupled cleverly, can match or beat much larger models on structured tasks. If you care about cheap, fast inference on logic, math, planning, constraint satisfaction, anything with a formal substrate, there's now a recipe that doesn't require retraining the base model. In the medium term, the architectural claim is more interesting. Most multi-agent systems today are text-passing systems. If activation-level coupling generalizes, if you can pair, say, a code model with a math model, or a vision model with a text model, by training a small bridge, then the architectural unit of future systems might not be an agent that emits tokens, but a model that exposes a hidden state interface other models can read from.
And the conceptual claim, which is the one I find hardest to stop thinking about, is the one about the protocol. Selective attention between models, knowing when to listen and when to ignore another model, might be a learnable primitive. Not something you program, something gradient descent finds, given a task and a channel. The fact that the gates converge on a structured habit, quiet during routine work, loud on important tokens, asymmetric in direction, that's not a feature you would have predicted from looking at the architecture alone. It is something the training process discovered about how to make two models cooperate.
I want to keep the steel man tight, but I want to land it cleanly, because I think this is the kind of paper where the listener should walk away with an honest read. Three things that complicate the strong version of the claim, Bella, in order of how much they bother me. One, the Python aggregate result. Yes, the qualitative examples are striking, and we shouldn't minimize that. The 7-parameter recurrence reconstruction is real high bandwidth transfer. But the aggregate math number is below the base model with thinking enabled. So when somebody says, this architecture enables tool use in language models, the honest version of that claim has to specify what kind of tool use and on what kind of task. For calculator-shaped tasks and solver-shaped tasks, yes. For general code as reasoning, the case isn't made yet. Two, the headline number for arithmetic is the best of 890 layer wiring configurations. Now, 95% of those configurations also beat baseline, so the result is robust to placement. That's the author's honest framing, and it's correct. But 96.5% is the best one. The median configurations number isn't the one in the abstract. A reader should hold best of many in mind. 3. Compute. Lockstep generation doubles the work per decoding step because you're running two models forward at every position. The paper acknowledges this in limitations, but doesn't quantify the trade-off against, say, a single model of twice the size. Whether activation-level coupling is genuinely cheaper than just using a bigger model is an open question.
All three are right, and the authors are reasonably forthcoming about each of them. The thing the paper does not undersell, and I think shouldn't undersell, is the conceptual contribution. Even if every one of those caveats stuck, even if the technique only works on a narrow band of tasks, even if compute is a wash, even if some of the configurations cherry-pick, the result that a structured communication protocol emerges from task loss alone between two frozen pre-trained models is interesting, independent of whether this specific recipe ships in production systems next year.
Agreed. And I think that's the right way to frame what this paper actually is. It is a piece of evidence about what kinds of cooperation between models are learnable. It is a working existence proof. The title's word, bicameral, is suggestive, two chambers, one mind, that activations can serve as a communication medium between separately trained systems. Whether or not the engineering details survive the next iteration of the idea, that existence proof now exists.
The world before this paper. Multi-model coordination meant text passing or weight merging. The world after. There's a third option, a continuous bi-directional per-token channel with learned gating, and it works.
One last thread before we close, because I think it actually anchors the conceptual point. The authors compare two variants of the bridge. One uses learned translation networks, small MLPs that convert one model's representation space into the other's. The other uses the identity function, just passes the vector through, no translation, only the gates and a few tiny adapters train. The identity variant has far fewer parameters, about 800,000 instead of 16 million. In distribution, the learned version wins, 96.5 versus a bit lower for identity. But on harder out-of-distribution problems, word problems the system wasn't trained on, the identity variant generalizes better, 22% versus 17 on a held-out benchmark. Less expressive bridge, better generalization.
Which is interesting because the identity variant only works at all because both models are copies of the same pre-trained model. So their representation spaces at matching depths are already compatible. The bridge doesn't have to translate, it just has to gate. And that lands on the so-called Platonic representation hypothesis, the idea that models converge on similar internal representations as they get capable. The identity with gate result is evidence that, for two copies of the same model at matching layers, the representations really are in compatible spaces. The channel works because the underlying geometry is already shared.
Which means the next interesting question, and this is the one the paper doesn't answer but clearly invites, is what happens when you try this between different models, different pre-trained models, different architectures, different sizes? Does the bridge still find a protocol, or does the representation mismatch kill it?
That is the experiment everyone is going to want to run.
That's where we'll leave it. The paper is The Bicameral Model, Bidirectional Hidden State Coupling Between Parallel Language Models, from Cedric Flamon, Udaya Guy, and Kana Shimizu at AWS Agentic AI. Links in the show notes, along with some related reads, if you want to dig further into hidden state communication and the activation level coupling thread more broadly.
Thanks for listening to AI Papers, a deep dive.